art, culture, politics, activism. Now, art in the pandemic age. Have you ever wondered why artists do what they do? What is their purpose? What are they trying to accomplish? I'm your host, Kyle Roman. Welcome to Artivism Now. Artivism, defined, is a portmanteau word combining art and activism. How is it that artists push the boundary of their medium? How do they move societies forward? How do they resolve issues in their neighborhoods, both local and worldwide? These questions are what we set out to answer by interviewing artists locally and the world over. We will get answers to those questions that artists put out there in the community.
On this episode of Artivism Now, we welcome portrait photographer and podcast host of Sidewalk Ghosts, Richard Radstone.
All right, we are here with Richard Radstone. Welcome to the program.
It's good to be with you, my new friend here.
Yes, we were, just for anybody who's listening, over on Richard's own podcast, Sidewalk Ghosts, and we were there and we had a conversation, and now we're switching over, doing Artivism Now here, bridging our second and third seasons with kind of like a mini simulcast-ish project. So it's great to have you on the program, and I know you're primarily, your medium is photography, but could you, in however much space you want to take, to maybe define for us what your main art medium is, and then maybe a little bit about the mission or vision of your art?
Okay, it's a really interesting question, and it's fun that you mentioned photography in it, which is a fundamental part of my history. But the second you hit it, the second you asked that question, two things came to my mind. The first one sounded a little bit selfish, which I'll share with you guys. I had to reframe it because I don't really even like it myself, which is, what is my medium? And it was, the answer that came to me was me. As weird as that sounds, it sounds really self-serving.
That's
but
all right.
Then I started thinking about, no, it's not me. Then I went, okay, it's my eyes. It's what I see in the world.
Yeah.
And then I go, well, okay, I'll take that. That's a little more humbler. But then it grew beyond that. As I was sitting here thinking about you, my medium truly is the input that comes at me from the world around me. And it's taken me a lifetime to finally realize that. We all have those sort of dreams. If you were going to do something else in your life, what would it be? Well, first, I really like where I am. But even in that exploration, if I was going to be anything else right now, as strange as this sounds, being this visual artist, I'd be a classical composer, which is crazy. And I know you're into the performing arts, so you get the emotional side of that.
Yes.
But I'm driven by this sort of musical beat and rhythm of my life. And I have things in my head I can't even get out because I don't even know how to connect an A plus B. I'm not A plus B, it sounds mathematical. An A, B, C. I won't say I'm tone deaf, I'm tone stupid. It's in my head, I just don't know how to push the keys. Okay, so that's an emotional thing that gets me going.
Yeah.
But in absorbing this world around me, and the skill sets that I have, because I am a photographer, I'm also a filmmaker, I'm now a writer, a podcaster. It's nuts, all the stuff I do. My wife looks at me sometimes and her eyes cross. It's like, how do you even keep all this stuff moving forward? And I've got my own set of methods that I can do a line upon line, prioritize what I'm going to do, which has been a lifetime of figuring that out and realizing that this one aspect right now if I was focusing on the one thing, it might take me hypothetically 4 days, but now I've got 6 things. So that one's hypothetically going to take me 8 days mixed with the others, but it's okay because it all fits into that perspective of the original question. As an artist, what is my medium and what drives me, which is everything I see and the skill set that I have and continue to develop. And that comes from a place of origin that I can define all the way back to sitting in English in high school. And I can keep going right now, but I know you're an educator and I'd like to pick it up there and sharing it, but I don't want to sit here and just exhausting air.
No, and that's great.
I'm silence let's, myself let's keep for a going second.
With it. That's good. Okay. No, I like it. Yeah.
Okay. Just taking a quick sip of water here.
Yeah, no worries.
I talk fast, guys. Sorry, deal with me and I'll slow down at times.
It's all good.
I remember back sitting in high school. All right. I graduated high school with a 1.8 GPA. And I tested, I'm sorry if I'm embarrassing you here. You mentioned to me in our interview, it may not hit the airspace at all, but everybody, so you know out there, our friend Kyle here tested early in his youth years with a high IQ.
Means sorry. Nothing whatsoever.
You're turning red right
the secret's
now.
Out. The secret's out.
Yeah, the secret's out. I blew the bubble there. But I also had a fairly high IQ. My wife's is higher. We still joke about it on the IQ test we had to take. Not saying I'm smart, but it was my methodology even back then in high school, 1.8. I don't even know how I got out of school. I ended up having to go to a junior college to transfer over to a university, which led to my going to photography school, which I'll transcend back to that in a second. But I want to get back to this point as I've set up a little bit of timeline there, is 1.8. I go to junior college. I apply myself in a different way. And I'll define that a little bit better in just a second. And pulled almost a 4.0. That's what helped me transfer over to a decent to a larger scale university.
Yeah.
Okay. But when I went to high school, we all test. I take my tests and I'd score high on the tests and I barely studied. I skimmed books. I was a visual absorber of materials. Mm-hmm. And all those times I was sitting in high school, seemingly as the disassociated student, it's because I wasn't getting the stimulation and I was just bored.
Yeah.
And I didn't go to class a lot. I don't know. My mom was either a naive or really giving or patient or her hands to the air. I don't know what to do with this kid. Cause I'd come home from school during school to get lunch and hang out. And she'd just feed me and I'd go back. It was obviously I was cutting school. truancy rules and laws were a little bit different then.
They were.
Now I probably would have got thrown out in all kinds of trouble, but you could look at my report card and it would show things like attendance, right? So first period, there'd be 42 absences. Second period, maybe 20 absences. Third period, more absences, but they are all over the place because I didn't go to school. I was bored crazy. Whenever I took a test, I'd score high on the test. But if there were 8 tests, I only took 2 of them because I probably wasn't there on the day of the test. Thus, I end up with a 1.8 GPA and the world looking at me of what's wrong with you. Applied myself in college. The first year of the junior college, went over to the university, took a photography course as an elective with my father. And I'm sitting in that photography course and Kyle, the floodgates opened. Mm. I'm going, oh my heavens, here's something I can apply this way I viewed the world to. And the world, as I was saying before, that I saw through my eyes came into my head and I had a way to do something with it, which was and is photography transcended in a whole bunch of other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So my medium is an emotional medium. My medium and mediums is a part of who I am, a reflection of my personality, my spirituality, my physicality, even of where I place myself and how I see things. And then I execute my craft based on that, as technical and nerdy science as it sounds, that absorption. And it's taken me 35 years of an artistic craft to start to scratch the surface on that. So I'm almost 60, but I feel like I'm 22 again. Nice. So that's a little hint out there to all the 22-year-olds and those in high school, is this is the old guy saying he's like 22. But in that, what he's saying is, in a more owned way, an emotional way, not an egotistical or look at me way, but own that little spark that's in you. And don't get distracted from it. And the distractions happen. They happen through success. Yeah. They happen through opportunity. They happen through all kinds of stuff. But you can quickly be pulled away from that artistic direction, which is really the tools that you use to live life in this emotional, even spiritual place. I'll get off the Zen master.
You brought it up a couple times, and I think it's something that we definitely want to transition to and broach as a subject in this interview, is that love and empathy is such driving force behind your art and your work that you do. And so maybe, you know, go into that for us, describe that for us. How is it that love and empathy has come up to be such a driving force for you as an artist?
Arts is a wonderfully crazy, dysfunctional, functional, mathematical, grammatical, hysterical, sane, insane, uplifted, feeling good about yourself and not liking yourself at all place to live. I think that's a lot in the world too. I'm not going to demean the human experience, but what's so interesting in these creative fields is the equations are different. Now I'm sounding like a mathematical person, and I'm a logical person and an emotional person at the same time. But what is so intriguing about creative thinking, creative process, and the mediums that we use is, in some traditional formulas of life, A plus B equals C. You can see a standardized sort of outcome to things. In art and artistic thinking or creative thinking, and you look at the great minds in mathematical places, you know, Einstein, look what he did. I mean, he was artistic with numbers. He's a superhero. You know, for the rest of us mortals out there trying to deal with it, and the rest of us mortals who say, hey, I want to be in the art field or use my imagination, when we hit A plus B equals another language or equals nothing or equals something you don't even know what the outcome of that is, you have to do a different weird equation. And before you know it, you're in the brushes, in the weeds of the unanswerable. The only answer that you have is, I can own that. And then when you own it, you have the world that looks at you and says, oh, that's wonderful. Or you have the world that says at it, I can't stand that. And in its most extreme cases, I can't stand you because you created that. And I don't even like the way you talked about that. Then you have to go back and start to create again. And while you're trying to create, you're also learning. Okay. So every time you learn, you find a new way to execute something. You find something you lock into that works and carries you through, but we're continually evolving as artists, as humans as well. And that whole pathway through, the variables change and the outcome is undefinable other than saying it's something I created. And it's something I created. You have to navigate with all this external stuff coming at you that quantifies your self-worth of who you are and what you, well, I'll say first, of what you create, which is a reflection of who you are if you're owning it the right way. So it ends up you looking in the mirror saying, can I love this person? You know, this person who created this stuff, can I feel good about me? Can I be empathetic to myself and build myself up? We all have our peers and the people that believe in us and those that we lean on that carry us and lift us and believe in us. And we have those that don't. But in the end, it ends up on, are you true to what you see, which is a reflection again of who you are and how you feel. And it's a really powerful high, and it's also a painful low. But in the end, I think it brings us to the greatest awareness of what we bring to the world. And I think, and I hope, it opens our eyes up, if we use it right, to seeing the world around us in a more empathetic way. That's the nirvana of it all, if we can get there.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. And the fact that you are a portrait photographer, kind of, you know, it directly relates to that relationship that you would have with love, empathy, and human connection. What is it about portrait photography that, you know, kind of, it really, you were drawn to that very specific type?
I think it's a combination of fear and vulnerability. Because I drop my walls as much as I can to allow someone else to drop their walls. So it's kind of a scary place, but it's also a really uplifting place, because you get to know people or feel, or have a feeling being around somebody like you can't explain anywhere else. And it's really a very delicate question for me to answer, because I can't be self-serving in it, because if I do, I lose myself in it. But the funny thing about it is, I can't explain how it happens, but there's something that happens about it that the world somehow opens up to me, and I don't know what it is. I'm just a goofball who doesn't shut up at times, and I'm dumb dad jokes, or mixed with true listening and true caring, mixed with very quiet, uncomfortable moments, mixed with moments that are just so united. And they happen in a really organic way. And I love it. You know, I in other works that I've done, and I think in a little while we might even get to that. But of course, I'm on, and I've had some moments in my life that have changed my perspective and forced me into some pretty difficult corners that in the end, and it came out of me on a presentation I was doing to an auditorium one day, where just this point came out in the middle of the presentation, and I said, and that's when I fell in love with the world. And I go, where'd that come from? You know, it was just an organic stream of thought during a presentation, but it was really profound. And afterwards, a few people came up to me and said, wow, I really liked that moment, what you had to say. And it's real. And the only reason I share it so boldly here with you is because you asked the question, and I'm trying to be as vulnerable as I can to you and to whoever's listening and saying it, but it's really a delicate thing. And portraiture, yes, but what's so funny, that's the way I view the world. I've done some works on what we're doing through environment-based project, where and it's everywhere. I mean, I just wandered the streets looking down, and everywhere you look, there's a remnant of what we threw away. You know, ultimately it's going to go into the ecosystem. It's going to get washed in and into the drains and in the ocean. Who knows what's going to happen to it, but it's not just the item. The item has an origin. So when I look at all this waste, I look beyond the waste. I see the piece of rubbish, and the project is called Rubbish, and I frame it, and it's done artistically in their big prints, but really it's artistic because it's art. Sorry, we're making art. But the purpose of it is, it's not a picture of a still life of rubbish on the street. It's a portrait of the human that must have left that. And it poses the question of what path was that human on that left that fast food bag, that left that oil carton, that left that rubber glove, that little rubber ring, that popsicle stick that has a dad joke on it, that Q-tip ground into the pavement, the cigarette butt. There's so many of them. But when you really look at it in a different way, you start to see maybe the person who left it there. And then you start to wonder. So everything is based in a relationship with whatever that human was on the other side of whatever I'm photographing. That's what, what drives me.
That's a fantastic, a way of approaching, you know, what we find in our natural landscape. And as an artist, finding your inspiration in places that are often unexpected or even neglected is something that, you know, makes it extremely unique in how you approach it in terms of a process point. And that has to be, you know, such a thrilling thought process and creative process to work outward from an object found in the environment to really try to create and craft a story from that point from which to pursue. How is that creative process different than maybe some other work that you would have done?
Sorry for the biggest sin in the world of radio is quiet time. So I'm pondering deeply on that while trying not to be dead air. It's a really profound question. And just to be sure I'm clear on it, how does being an artist and my point of view reflect to other stuff? And now defining what other stuff is that's what the question I'm working to get for. Is that right?
Yeah, like if you're having to work from an object found in a landscape, how is that different as an artist than working from the face of someone that you are photographing?
It's how I walked into the landscape. It's owning how, it could be easy to say it's owning how I'm feeling in the moment, but that's not even fully relevant, because what's so neat about art and creating is it's therapeutic too. So you can either work with the feeling that you're having or work against it. And either one of them is healing. Or either one of them with the wrong perspective can be pretty destructive. I had a joke that I used to share the studio with a couple photographers. And one day we were sitting in the middle of the studio joking around, and I don't even think I can do it right now. I'm not voice talent, okay? But this day I hit the perfect, perfect performance as a very aesthetic European French artist. And the idea was, I walk into the stage and I'm going to blow it here. So please don't mock me, whoever's listening to this. Maybe it'll come out good. Maybe I'm going to completely blow it. But again, I'm not voice talent, but I'm going to humble myself to you and try at least.
Good, good. That's good.
So I walk in the studio. I'm going, I cannot create the thing today. I'm blocked. Nothing is in my mind. It's a good day. I'm having a good day. Nothing's in my head. I can't see a thing. I walk over to the phone, I pick up the phone, and I call my home. My wife, who is my life, okay? My daughter, who is my life. I love them dearly, okay? So this joke, it's a joke, okay? It's counter to how I really feel. This is just an illustration. I pick up the phone, I dial my home, and I go, darling, darling, I sound like I don't even know what I sound like there. I sound Zsa Zsa Gabor mess gone sideways. So my love, I cannot be with you any longer. I am done. I am done. I do not want to see you. I do not want to see my daughter. Do not come. Do not call. Do not show up. I am gone. I will never return again. I will not think of you at all. You are over. You are out of my life. You are done and gone. I want you no more. Hang up the phone. Okay. I turn to my buddy in the studio. I go, I feel horrible. I feel terrible. My life is over. I can't do a thing now. I'm ruined. I'm crushed. Ah, I can create, you know? Weird emotional dilemma. Okay, now I'll go create something that'll heal so I can go to the next disaster. Okay, that's one perspective of it, which a lot of artists go in that place. I don't even know, I can't even understand, you know, I can and I can't. Vincent van Gogh chopping off his ear, I can't even imagine. You know, you look at Mozart's life and all these amazing artists, and you look at these lives and you see these artists that create these amazing works and have these tragic lives, and it's strange. And then you see some that don't have these tragic lives that manage to do it, and then you see some that have these not so tragic lives that, I'm sorry, this sounds horrible, art is great, we're all creating something, but you see some art that's so created for commercial purposes that you could see it's just going, and it's cookie cutter, mm-hmm. and they've got great lives. I'm not criticizing it at all.
Right.
It's a great choice. But the balance is, how do you stay emotionally stable in your life and own the feelings, whatever's going on? The dark feelings can inspire. The brightest, wonderful feelings can inspire as well. How do you find your place in that when you can walk out into the field, like you're saying, it's a field or whatever, but when you can walk out amongst the rocks, I think that's what we're saying, and mm-hmm. then look at the rocks and own something in that moment that is uniquely from you, from your gut within,
mm-hmm.
without becoming overly optimistic and overly joyful or overly dark? How do you really honestly look at something and then create from that? So walking into that field, I would own whatever I'm feeling then at that moment. And even though I'm photographing a rock, how I'm feeling in that moment is going to drive, motivate, and inspire my perspective of how I'm going to approach that from all of the fundamental reasons of optics and lights and composition and processes and all that. That's secondary to a gut reaction to owning an emotional feeling that's either going to heal you or sustain you in the same feeling, but you're still moving forward. Long question, deep question. That's just the Yoda in me.
It's a great way to look at it. You know, you have, a sense of with the connection that you have to own. There's also that responsibility for a necessary detachment, it seems. So the balancing of that detachment versus connection, I think, is a fascinating place for an artist to create. And if you want to find the if you want to find the work, we have Richard's websites. Most of the work you can find will be on richardradstone.com, right?
Correct.
And that kind of is a nice, a really nice bridge website to the myriad of work that Richard also does with portraiture, and then also where we wanted to get to in this conversation, to Sidewalk Ghosts, the podcast project. And so let's get into that real quick. Sidewalk Ghosts. Sidewalk Ghosts has its sidewalkghosts.com as well. And we'll link the websites in the episode. So on the main page, there's a quote on there, and if you don't mind, I'll read it for the audience. If we seek to truly see each other, face our obstacles, and grow our connections from a place of sincerity, empathy, and acknowledgement of others, what we create and the impact we leave will have long-lasting reach and effect. From speaking with you, and then from also researching your work and everything, the resounding theme, I feel like, is the theme of passing something on, to not only passing on our own feelings and empathy for one another, but also passing on of the art form and the creative process. What is it that really motivated you and got you going to create Sidewalk Ghosts?
I'm a storyteller, and I'm a story seeker. And even in the portrait, if it's in a studio and it's a person on a plain background, leaning on a posing table, and their mouths aren't moving and their eyes are transfixed, there's still a story there. That process happened from an emotional experience that happened with that person I was photographing, and the story that came from within and whatever I was feeling that day, there's a story even in that simplest portrait. So even in that moment, I'm a storyteller. In that commitment, I've learned to speak, I've learned to capture stories, I've learned to share stories, and it's based from an experience that leans and arcs into that. So I'm gonna share pieces of the experience to get us to that place. And I'm gonna be very, very, very vulnerable and exposed on a chapter of my life. And it's post the 2008-2009 recession, which as a working photographer, and that's the bulk of my mainstay even to this day, and my hopes are, and what I'm working to do, and I'll discuss a little bit further as we go, transition into this world of sidewalk ghosts, because there's a real purpose to that. And it's not about wealth and riches and fame or anything like that. It's about sustaining a reasonable existence to be able to put all this energy and spirit into that sphere of growing this message of which you just read, because I really believe it, and it's who I am, yeah. And it's what I see in the world around me. And I feel a responsibility to be this catalyst to doing whatever I can with this skill set to make that happen. Mm-hmm. Back to 2008, 2009, that recession just stopped the business. And I watched this movie, Julie and Julia. It was about this lady, great movie, I loved it, who decided every single day to do a blog about her creating a recipe from Julia Child's cookbook. And she did it every day, and it took off, and it turned into this interesting movie. And I looked at that and I said, okay, from a marketing point of view, I got really cognitive on this. It definitely wasn't artistic. It was very cognitive. Is okay, everyone's doing blogs now. I'm not working. The recession has just destroyed my business. I'm now cresting into 2011, trying to hobble along and make it. 2010, 2011, the first part of it, literally almost destroy this. And this is the vulnerable part. We came so close to losing the house, to becoming homeless. I mean, it was all on the line. I had nothing. I mean, I'm pulling nickels from underneath the car seat, not child's car seat, the seat of the car, to get 65 cents together to go down to buy my daughter an ice cream cone at Thrifty's so she still has some normalcy. And she'll look at us and go, you want one? And mom and dad would say, no, we don't really want one. We want this for you, just to let her still have some normalcy. I mean, it was bad as could be in that situation. I mean, I had some years earlier where because of my own choices, I was homeless for 2 years. And those were my own choices, and I was single. It's a different thing than it's happening here. And it's nothing to compare with how bad other things happen to people out there, nor as good as it could be. I mean, but I'm being very sincere about the situation. And I'm walking around with a backpack of gear going, okay, I'm going to try to come up with some sort of daily blog experience from a marketing perspective. And I wandered around for months carrying 40 pounds of camera backpack, because this is 2011. Cameras were just starting to get lighter, but not so much. So I had my larger camera and walking around with all this backpack gear everywhere I went. In the middle of this whole thing, I had one ace up my sleeve, which was this opportunity to be hired by a company. And I'm gonna leave it at that. I don't want to be too victimized myself or anything, because this isn't a hard me victim story, nor too sinister about the acts of somebody else, because that's not what this is about. But bottom line, after 6 months of shifting and negotiation and all that, and something that was supposed to happen didn't happen, which was the last effort I had, and I was devastated. And I'm not going to get way into the story. It's on the website, on the sidewalkghost.com website. There's a little video on there, and it talks about someone called Slava. And if you go there, you could pick it up from there. But bottom line, I left a meeting on the East Coast after several flights back there for this prospective hire that would have changed our lives, that didn't happen for pretty painful reasons. And I'm in the car with the driver. His name was Slava, and I had an experience with him that literally rocked my world, of how someone else cared about me more than they cared about themselves. Someone genuinely took interest in me, not for what I did or what I looked like and blah, 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 but took interest in me because I was an upset person sitting in the back of his car, and he cared about me and he wanted to know if I was okay. And I took his picture and I wrote a story that became this first blog. And then I had another experience on this airplane where I could have done what happened to me to somebody else, not knowing who they were, and condemned someone for their actions or my perception of who they were. And I chose not to, and I framed it into something else, and I believe it was something else, and it was positive. And I go, wow, thank you, Slava. You healed me in a nanosecond from how someone perceived me, and I was carrying that baton of how they perceived me, and I was going to perceive somebody else with that same baton. And Slava, right in the middle, saved me by saying, hey, I'm going to care about you, Richard. I'm going to be empathetic to you, Richard. I want to know what you're going through. From that moment, I go, oh, this is it. I'm just going to start approaching people and finding out who they are. And I did that. And I said, I'm going to do this for a year every single day and not miss a day. And every day I'm going to find somebody no matter where I am. And I wander the streets and I've got endless experiences of that. And every day I did that. After 2 weeks, it became, before it was an obsession, then it became a possession. Obsession, and then an outlook. And I did nothing else. I just focused on that. What's so weird is a month and a half into it, my phone started to ring from people I hadn't spoken to in 20 years with photography assignments. That year, at the end of the year, I think I billed like $5.65 more than that offer on the tragedy. Yeah. So I sustained myself. I didn't market myself. I wasn't even thinking about my being a professional photographer. All I cared about was waking up every day and going out on the streets and wandering, some days for 8 hours or longer. Every day authoring an essay, every day posting that essay, and every day just doing that, period. I tell people I fell in love with the world, like I said earlier. I did. I truly did. And the world took care of me somehow. It's the strangest thing. 3 months in, WordPress featured it as a blog to follow, as a, one of the top 10 daily projects. And it blew up. And all of a sudden, I've got people from around the planet commenting. And it started to become this two-way dialogue through the comment feeds. And there was thousands of people every month coming in, or every day coming into the thing. And it blew up. And it literally changed my life. And that perspective you read grew from that, because I realize now, even so much to this day, that it's not about me. It's not about me. There's things I do, but if I'm seeing right, what I do will improve, but I'm not going to be, this is so cliche. I already started a sentence, so I have to finish it. Not a taker, but a giver. Yeah. And it's too, it's just too cliche. I strike it. If you in the end put a beep on this, on that, you can, or I'll beep it right now. Beep on that. It's about integrity. You know, it's about owning who you are and allowing everybody else to be who they are, for better or for worse. And I don't have to be with everybody. I can truly dislike somebody, but I can still love them. And I can truly want to hug somebody, and I can still love them. And that is the, and it came through photography, and then it turned into film works, because I did it for video for almost a year. After the first year, I started video. I set up a nonprofit during that time, and I got my lesson of, okay, I got into administration, not spirituality and emotional side. The nonprofit's there. It's great. It helps out a little bit. It's sitting in the sidelines. I did some fun stuff. We did some fun stuff with it. A little fight in it, not fight, an aspiration on using digital more responsibly. I believe that these mobile devices are a great tool, but they're not the destination. Yeah. So this Operation 365 became that for a while. And then I fell away from the fundamental integrity and organic emotional side of why I was wandering the streets photographing people. And out of that, a year ago, I'm going, no, I got to start this again. It just doesn't feel right. So I started authoring through a podcast narrations of those original stories. And I was into it for a little while. And then I had this opportunity to interview Danny Glover and Cedric the Entertainer. And they became this two-way, I won't say two-way, we got their voices mixed with my narration. And I go, wait a minute, you know. And the whole time through, my wife, Terry, she's going, Rich, you know, you got to start doing fresh things. Start meeting people now. Get back out there. You shine better when you're out there. And your works improve, and what you put out there has more meaning. You got to get back out there. Yes, repost all these, and I'm reposting the original essays on the website, so there's historical sites there, and I'm cleaning them up a little bit. Those are going to be a book. I also wrote a book that I'm still seeking a the right agent. So if there's any literary agents out there that want to see my book or read my book, Sidewalk Ghost, I'm sorry, I'm going to be shameless.
Let's do it.
It's this book that talks about this whole experience of realizing that we all have something from within that's going on in our lives that motivates who we are and what we're doing. And if we realize that in one another, perhaps we can commune together better, work together better, be more successful in the things that we do. So the book deals with that, mixed with a bunch of the stories from the Sidewalk Ghost journey, not Sidewalk Ghost. At that time, I called it Project 365. From all these interviews on the street, there's some select stories in there that have some poignant outcomes and instruction and inspiration, mixed with some life experience in there, mixed with this arc that just says, hey, when are we all going to get together and start working forward to do this? So that was created. Then I'm going, nope, it's time to start fresh. So I started the podcast with those re-narrations, like I said. Had that experience with Danny Glover and Cedric the Entertainer, leaning on my wife, who's much smarter than me, and said from that point forward, following this organic voice, no, it's time to start meeting fresh people now and making new friends and reaching out to the world again and letting more in and start letting other voices come in. And that's become Sidewalk Ghost Podcast. And that's the big part of the chapter that's happening now, but it all works together. Before I was saying how having the several projects working on, maybe one takes 2 days on itself and 4 days combined with others. So I've managed now to have this little palette of things, my portraiture and now fine arts in its world, that's a reflection of who I am and what I see and what I feel and what I absorb. And then there's Sidewalk Ghosts, which is the same reflection, and it's all working together. It's a pretty interesting place right now. I don't know if next week the bill collectors are going to be at the front door again or not, but the one thing I do know is at least trying to live in that world of integrity that isn't based on my own self-perceptions of who I am as an artist, because it's completely beyond me.
Yeah, that's an amazing sentiment to provide, and thank you for joining us and sharing that vulnerable story about your life. And God bless Slava, wherever Slava is out there, because Slava, you know, gave us all this inspiration from Richard all these years later, and we'll continue, you know, that'll be the gift that Slava gave. And then all the people that had interactions with you thereafter, you know, feel that. And that's something, you know, we've talked about earlier, is that the profound impact of love and empathy on people is stronger than any weapon of destruction that there might be out there. And real quick, I just want to shout out again, the website's richardradstone.com, where you can find the artwork and the portraiture. There's sidewalkghost.com for the podcast, and then nonprofit work at operation-365.org. And you also have a production company that you own and run, and that is c47contentlab.com. And these will all be linked in the episode description. So thank you very much, Richard, for joining us tonight. And if you have any parting words for our audience members, maybe art school kids or young people looking to go into the field of becoming a professional artist, what would you leave them with?
I'm glad you asked that. As cliche as it sounds, is we all have to really realize how much our impact truly does matter to the world around us. And the simplest gestures, the simplest thoughts have profound effect on the world around us. You know, and to the youth, and even to all of us older folk, we've all experienced in our lives. I mean, we've all had that one person come up and say that one thing that's great or that one thing that's not so good at the right or wrong time, and how heavy that affects us, and even how small some of them are, and how heavy we carry those smallest things for the longest times that direct us and push us to the good, or sometimes push us to the worst places of how we feel and view ourselves. So to anybody in the arts or anybody in life, especially, our youth, I mean, you amazing tweens and teens and young adults, you know, know that you matter. And I know that sounds cliche. Everyone says that, you know, anything you believe or can conceive, you can achieve, you know, or follow the dream, you know, that those are all just sentimental statements. Life is going to happen. Life's ugly and life's great. But when you look in the mirror, know how profound your influence is around you, and find it and dig deep to find it, and hold that little voice inside you that says, this is the way I'm heading. And I promise it's going to direct you well. It's not going to be easy, and it's going to take patience and time and tenacity, but it's real. I'm not going to say it can happen or any dreams and blah, blah, blah can happen. Those are cliche statements, but you'll find your place and you're going to be truly okay. And it's the little tiny gestures that matter. So to parents looking at your kids, you know, when they're making you nuts, or kids, when you're looking at your parents, when they're making you nuts, realize that's coming from somewhere in their life and their history, and pause for just a second. And then take all of that input in, the positive and negative, and then think about how you're going to respond to it, but who you are inside, which is a wonderful, unique human, deserving of love, deserving to love, and deserving to do the things that you're going to do, no matter who you are. And I have countless stories on how real those gestures are and the outcomes of them. And I wish we had a lot more time to share them, but I'm not going to be selfish with generous Kyle's time here, or your listening ears. And I hope that thing I just finished with isn't too cliche, but I promise it's incredibly real. And my heart's with you. I don't even know you by name, but you're in my silent prayer and you're in my silent thoughts. And now I'm sounding like a minister. But that would be my long-winded answer.
Yeah. And cliche. No, not at all. And I think what you get when you listen to Richard speak, and from our conversation beforehand, is you get the genuine nature of that sentiment. And that's not something that necessarily needs anything beyond what you just said, because we know it comes from a place of genuine, you know, goodness. And so I'm happy to have you on and lift up your voice, and hopefully we could have you on again on this program and get some people to watch, to listen to Sidewalk Ghosts and take in those stories that are around us at every moment of our lives. So thank you for bringing your world over to mine, hopefully we can share this world, and everybody can, you know, work towards the things that you are pushing for with your work, and realize the things that you've realized. So thank you.
Thank you. And everyone lean into Kyle too. You know, he's got he's doing a good thing here, and he's getting all of us thinking in the right ways. And I spent some time with him. He's a really good human. So I feel like I'm in deep waters here, even receiving his compliments. I won't take the last word here. I'll shut up and let Kyle finish his show.
Well, they don't get to hear me talk very often. I always like to let the guests just have the floor. So if you do want to hear me talk, you can go over to Sidewalk Ghosts and check out the episode when it pops up here in a couple weeks or so. And you know, you could have a little bit of insight into this person who hosts this little old podcast over here in this corner of the world. So thank you once again, Richard, and we'll definitely do it again.
Thanks much. Have a great evening, my friend.
All right. You too, sir. Take care. Okay.
You too. Bye-bye.
Special thanks to Richard Radstone for joining us today on this episode of Artivism Now. And thanks again for having me on an episode of Sidewalk Ghosts as a guest. You can check that episode out in about a week, around March 1st. So go to sidewalkghosts.com for all the information on Richard's podcast. And to view his work and his message, go to richardradstone.com. And remember, artists out there, keep it lit. Let it flow. Let it mean something. And goodbye.